sorry. No, when you look what's happened in the last 20 years since the communists won the war,
right?
They screwed up the economy. They screwed up the livelihood of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the North wanted the South because of its agricultural potential. It was the rice basket of Asia. They totally screwed it up, and now they're going back to the original agrarian structures that existed when Vietnam was a net exporter of food.
Mm-hmm.
So the Vietnamese didn't want the communists, but to me the only rallying point that the Viet Cong and the North Vietnamese had was xenophobia. They'd been colonized by the Chinese, they've been colonized by the Japanese, they've been colonized by the French, and now they're being colonized by the Americans.
Mm-hmm.
So that was their program. Once they got the Americans out, what did they have to put in place?
Mm-hmm.
They had the Russian advice, and they weren't going to take the Chinese. You know, there was a great joke in the New Yorker when, after Nixon had opened up China, and the Chinese premier came over to visit the United States. He's back in China on a psychiatrist's couch, and he says, I don't understand it. He said, I went to the United States, I ate hot dogs, I drank Coca-Cola, I came home, and we invaded Vietnam. So, I mean, historically, the Chinese and Vietnamese have never gotten along.
Right.
So when the Vietnamese won the war, who came in to give the Vietnamese advice? The Russians.
Worst possible.
Yeah, and where did it lead them? Down the tubes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you go back to when Kennedy first committed the Green Berets, you know, we saw communism as a monolithic evil.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know anything about Southeast Asia, China, Vietnam, the Vietnamese Cambodians, any of this stuff. But the Vietnamese basically wanted to plant rice, feed their village, feed their family, and pray.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no such thing in the Vietnamese village as separation of church and state. Buddhism is part of their day-to-day routine. The communists threatened their religious convictions, threatened their social structure. But the one thing that rallied people around was xenophobia. And it won. It won in the short run, but mm-hmm. lost in the long run. So, but I look at this now, you know, 25 years later,
mm-hmm.
and it's easy for me to say that when I was there on a day-to-day basis. I really believe the Wahao were anti-communist. I couldn't speak for the people in Hue or Da Nang,
right?
You know, or Da Lat.
Mm-hmm.
But in my little world, I believe what we were doing was the right thing.
That's right. You know, yeah, it was confirmed.
Yeah.
For you on a daily basis by the people that you knew.
That I knew it, right?
Yeah.
Whether I could extrapolate that to the rest of the country was not fair because I didn't live with the other people.
Mm-hmm.
Politically, today, well, two things. One is the fact that I got involved with Ashoka, to me, is an attempt to reattach my sentiment and feeling toward helping developing countries mm-hmm. solve their problems, but allowing the local people to solve their own problems and giving them support from the United States. And I think that's the way to go. The other thing is that when we think of the public sector versus the private sector, I'm beginning to more and more believe the public sector no longer being governments, but the public sector being nonprofits and non-governmental organizations as being the most effective vehicles to deliver family planning, primary health care, agricultural extension, low-level technologies. So I see, if I ever get to a point where I have money that I don't need, I could see myself donating it to an Ashoka-type organization, IVS,
mm-hmm.
not government-type organizations, but public sector-type work, Peace Corps, maybe.
But they don't need it.
But I see an evolution of thinking of aid to developing countries based on betting on the social entrepreneurs of these countries directly, not going through expensive bureaucracies and not going through the government. That's one thing. Politically, I am more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
I remember reading a review of the economist Keynes, and they asked him, and this is metaphorically, it's not literal, but if you could summarize all your economic theory in one phrase, what would you say? And in the New York Review of Books, it said Keynes' philosophy would be, there's no such thing as a free lunch. And you know, a kid gets a school lunch program in Cuba or the U.S. or Brazil or Thailand. Somebody's planning the food, somebody's buying the food, somebody's transporting it, somebody's distributing it, somebody's cooking it, and somebody's serving it. Somebody's paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
The kid is getting a free lunch, but it's not free.
It's only free to him, but it's not to society.
Right. Somebody has made a decision that it's worth paying for to get that kid's stomach full.
Yeah.
But there's no free lunch. So to me, the concept of socialism or communism or whatever, where you guarantee education, health, nutrition, because it's a social investment in human capital,
mm-hmm.
is a great ideal, but it's not free. Somebody's paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
So today, politically, I believe in a balanced budget.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you should spend more than you take in. I believe in individual accountability. I believe people should be responsible for their own actions. I believe in universal health care.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that there are things that government should do. I believe in good quality public education paid for by real estate taxes. I think that's important. And I have no problem with school lunch, WIC programs, women, infant, children, things yeah. like that. So I think I straddle between the I guess I call myself an independent politically. I'm not as liberal as I used to be. And I can see a Republican point of view for accountability and not spending, because if 33 cents of every dollar, tax dollar that I pay for to the government goes to pay interest on a debt, that 33 cents could be used more advantageously for other programs if we didn't have the debt, or could come back into my pocket and I could contribute it to IVS or Ashoka. So the fact that we're spending more than we take in
mm-hmm.
works against people for welfare, because there's not enough money to do welfare.
Right.
If I live on credit cards and I just can pay the interest, yeah, I'm going to go bankrupt. So
sooner or later.
I mean, that's just the way it is. So I guess politically,
why make yourself from a first to a third world country?
Exactly. So you can't kid yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you got,
so even Keynes would have said,
yeah, yeah.
There's no free lunch.
There's no free lunch.
Which is not what most people on the far right would say, Keynes would say.
Right. And there's not enough money to do everything that you want to do. So you basically got to set priorities.
Mm-hmm.
And fund those that you think you can do your best. I think the Peace Corps and IVS provided paradigm for doing good and development that has since evolved into new ways of looking at it.
Mm-hmm. And many people from those organizations went into AID
right.
and other places, yourself,
right.
but many others,
right,
to begin to change the old thinking of, well, let's get
right.
1,000 tractors,
right.
you know,
yeah.
from Alice Chalmers and
yeah.
dump them in Vietnam and they'll solve the rice problem.
Exactly. And they'll get stuck in the mud.
Yeah.
Now, you know, I mean, Jesse Helms' idea is to abolish AID and have private business do all the work. Well, it's not going to do all the work. But AID has been a self-perpetuating entity that would never work itself out of business because there was too much vested interest among the AID people to keep it going.
They want their pension.
Right?
Yeah. I know one was the best man for Jim Beebe.
Right.
He's looking towards his 30th year.
There you go.
He and Maria have already bought their house in Corvallis, Oregon, where they're going to retire.
Where NGOs and nonprofits and IBS type organizations, you get more bang for your buck. And to me, that's where the world is going. And I know the Swedes and the Canadians and the English, they have their Peace Corps type programs, and
Japanese too.
And you don't have to set up a mission in every country in the world to disperse money. You can do it a lot more effectively by betting on either the activists in these developing countries or people like IBS people that serve as catalysts and help get things going. And I think that's where it's going to go.
Yeah, and do you think that your role, following on this, was beneficial?
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's been an evolutionary process.
You were only one of a number of volunteers who had been assigned in this, at least this area, if not the particular hamlet, and the collective impact of... I'm putting words in your mouth. I'm sorry.
Exactly. No, and it gave me the opportunity to see what happens at the hamlet level,
mm-hmm.
what happens at the regional level, at AID level.
Mm-hmm.
So if I look at my life, I've worked for a private voluntary organization. I work for a U.S. government bureaucracy. I work for a foundation, mm-hmm. Rockefeller.
Right.
I work for a university, both in Brazil and in the States.
That's right.
And now I'm in private enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see the advantages and disadvantages of each kind of social entity. I'm very happy in what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
I also teach at two universities as an adjunct member at the BU School of Public Health and at Lesley College in the Graduate Studies Program in Health and Nutrition. So I go to faculty meetings, I advise students. I don't make a living doing it.
Yeah.
But it keeps me reading the journals. And I can see how things are evolving. I mean, I can see where the UN is under attack now. I can see where the UN does good things and it doesn't do good things. It's just become a monolithic bureaucracy where people are in there.
It's a dumping ground.
It is.
I mean, I knew people overseas who just assumed that because they were politically connected, they were going to live in New York and,
tax free.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And our tax money that we pay goes to pay the budget of the UN. I mean, peacekeeping, I think the UN is great because I think it's a multinational force and it keeps people in Cyprus from killing each other and it keeps people in Bosnia from killing each other. And
they did manage the Cambodian elections.
Yeah. So I can see where the UN would be great for multinational. I'm not so sure it's good for agricultural development. To me, it's not what it used to be. It's a new world.
Yeah, yeah. I think you probably put a good cap on a lot of the a lot of the discussion.
Yeah.
Let me pause this,
Look
over your thing once more to see if I have any follow-up, but I'm fairly satisfied, are you?
Yeah, very satisfied.
Okay, let me pause. Back on, and just for one very quick thing, one sentence, I guess it's the last one you typed in. Very humbling one for me to see the mistreatment and racism by the U.S. troops toward a people they had absolutely no understanding.
Yeah.
What kind of incidents were you referring to?
Well, the soldiers had their own slang to
mm-hmm.
speak of the Vietnamese pejoratively.
Yeah.
I mean, if I went into Saigon, you couldn't help be with, at some point, with U.S. soldiers and listen to the way they spoke.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain attitude that Americans have toward Vietnamese because they were, quote, third world. Mm-hmm. You know, they were small. Size has something to do with it. Looks has something to do with it.
Absolutely.
Poverty has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that most soldiers didn't want to be there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they couldn't communicate with one another at a level that was more than just, you know, superficial. It was sad to, you know, here these kids were sent to do a job or to do, to serve their country. They didn't believe in what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't, they were counting the days to leave. And they were thrust in a situation, in a society, they didn't understand the war, they didn't understand the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And they let it be known.
Yeah.
And and I saw that on a day-to-day basis. I mean, that was the rule rather than the exception. I was sensitive to that kind of thing.
Yeah, because you had gotten to know them and liked them very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Other than that, I think we've covered a lot.
Yeah.
And Dick, thank you very much for the hospitality, for the meal, introducing me to your family, for chatting.
I've enjoyed this. It's kind of like a therapy session for me.
You know, is it really?
No, I mean, you know, I don't get a chance to talk about this a lot, and
except when you see Steve and Sabina,
yeah, exactly,
or something like that. And how often do you get to Honolulu?
Once in my whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Got to go back.
You know, I'm
going to turn this off. I think
I try and make an effort to go to a Vietnamese soup shop.